to Animal Companions. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading another chapter in The Case of the Careless Kitten by Earl Stanley Gardner, and if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles and newsletters from other sources about the animals in our lives. We're going to start today's readings with The Case of the Careless Kitten by Earl Stanley Gardner. In the last reading, we learned that Trag had tried interrogating Gerald Shore, who refused to share any information. Rather, he demanded that his attorney, Perry Mason, be present. Lieutenant Trag wasn't happy, but Perry gave Trag enough doubt to consider alternative possibilities for the death of Leech. Chapter 14. Mason's unlisted telephone was ringing as he opened the door of his apartment. He switched on the lights, crossed over, picked up the receiver, and said, "Let's have it." It was Della Street. As soon as she started talking, Perry realized that she was in a nervous funk and trying to cover up. "Gosh, Chief, is that you?" She was off at the tempo of pneumatic riveter exploding into action. "I think I may be violating the form, force, and effect of the statutes in such cases made and provided, and my actions are probably against the peace and the dignity of the people of the state of California. I guess I've graduated into a full-fledged criminal." "They tell me prison is a great experience," Mason assured her. "You'll learn a lot." Her laugh was high-pitched, and there was a catch in the middle of it. "Paul Drake warned me that if I'd wind up in jail, if I went on working for you, but I was too stubborn to listen to him." "Well, you haven't been sentenced yet. What have you done?"
I've kidnapped a witness, she wailed.
"Done what?" "Snaked him right out from under Lieutenant Trag's nose, and I'm holding him incommunicado."
"Where?"
"In my automobile, or rather, your automobile."
"Where are you?"
"At a service station about four blocks from your apartment."
"Well, who's the witness?"
"He's sitting out in the car now. His name is Lunk, and he..."
"Wait a minute," Mason interrupted. "What was that name?"
"Lunk. He's the gardener out at the Shore place, and he's the temporary custodian of the poisoned kitten."
"Well, how does he spell his name?"
L-U-N-K. Thomas B. Lunk. That's part on the up and up. I've already managed to get a look at the driver's license."
"What does he know?"
"I don't know exactly, but I think it's awfully important."
"Well, why?"
"He got off a streetcar about two blocks from the house. It was just after the guard collared you and took you inside. I saw the streetcar come to a stop and this man get off. He's an old, weather-beaten outdoor type of man. He came hurrying toward the house. Occasionally, he'd break into a run for a few steps. You could see he was in great rush."
"Well, what did you do?"
"Followed a hunch," she said. "Started the car and drove down a block to meet him. Got out of the car and asked him if he was looking for the Shore residence."
"Well, then what?"
Mason asked, as she hesitated. I'd rather not tell you all of this over the phone."
"You've got to, at least the part that you don't want him to hear."
"Well, he was so excited, he was stammering. He was just, well, he kept nodding his head, and, well, he couldn't talk at first. Then he said he had to see Mrs. Shore right away. I turned on my best manner and asked him if he knew that Mrs. Shore when he saw her. Just sort of sparring for time and trying to find out what it was all about. He said that he'd worked for her, that he's the gardener who's been with the place for 12 or 13 years.
"But doesn't live there?" Mason asked.
"No, the address on his driving license is 642 South Belvedere. He says he lives in a little bachelor shack in the back of a house. He's used to living in a room over the garage at the Shore place, but then he went down to live in this little shack."
"What's he know?"
"I don't know. He was so excited and he could hardly talk. He said he had to see her at once, that something had happened, and I told him that Mrs. Shore wasn't at home, and that I happened to know where she was. I could take him to see her.
I got him in the car, drove away from the place, and then started stalling, pretending that I needed oil and gas, and then let the attendant at the service station here talk me into changing spark plugs. I told him that Mrs. Shore was where she couldn't be disturbed right away, but that we could see her in 15 or 20 minutes. I'd take him to her as soon as possible. All the time, of course, I kept calling up, hoping that you'd get a taxi and come in. When I didn't hear anything from you, I bribed the service station attendant to let the air out of one of my tires and tell me that I had a puncture that had been having to be fixed right away. He got the tire off and kept fooling around with it. Now my boyfriend's getting nervous and a little suspicious. I've got to let the attendant here put the tire back on, and you'll have to get here in a rush. What's the address of the service station? On the corner, four blocks down the boulevard from your apartment. I'm coming right down. Wait, wait there, Mason said. What'll I do when you get here? Just follow my lead. I'll size him up and tell him whatever I need to tell him. He has steady blue eyes with a faraway squint, a weather-beaten face with high cheekbones, a drooping mustache, about 55 or maybe 60, gnarled hands, stooping shoulders, long arms, slow-moving, and has a single-track mind. Sort of simple, but obstinate and sullen when he gets suspicious. I think he'll believe anything you tell him, if you can make it sound plausible. But I was so excited and, well, he's getting terribly suspicious. You'll have to get down here right away or he'll walk out on me. On my way, Mason promised and hung up. He switched out the lights, went down in the elevator, crossed the street and waited in the shadows to make certain he wasn't being followed. Having convinced himself on that point, he walked rapidly for three blocks and paused long enough to once more be certain no one was on his trail. Then he walked to an all-night service station where an attendant in white uniform was just finishing tightening the bolts on the left hind wheel of Mason's car. Mason walking up to Della Street, apparently without noticing the man in his late 50s who sat at her side, raised his hat, said, "Good evening, Miss Street. I hope I didn't keep you waiting." Della searched his eyes for a signal, hesitated a moment, then said, with some show of feeling, "Well, you certainly were late. If it hadn't been for finding a nail in this tire, I couldn't have waited." "Too bad," Mason said. "I was unavoidably detained. You know, I told you I could get to you with an audience with Mrs. Shore, but you see, she's..." He broke off, apparently seeing for the first time the man beside Della. Della said, "It's all right. This is Mr. Lunk. He's working out at the Shore place as a gardener. He wants to see Mrs. Shore, too." Mason said, "Mrs. Shore is in a hospital. She was poisoned. She says she took the poison by mistake. But that isn't what the police think, and they're making a matter for police investigation." "Poison?" Lunk ejaculated. Della Street registered dismay. "Can't we see her? Mr. Lunk says his business is terribly important." Mason said, "We can try at least. I thought everything was arranged, but the way things have turned out..." He shifted his position so he could watch Lunk from the corner of his eye. "You see," he went on, "with a police guard on the premises, the minute we tried to see her, they'd begin asking us questions." "I don't want no police," Lunk burst out. "I gotta see Mrs. Shore personally and private." Mason raised his eyebrows. "You say you work there? I'm the gardener. Live there? Nope. I come to work on the streetcar and go home on the streetcar. I lived there for a while. That was years ago. She wanted me to stay on, but I can't stand having a darned Oriental snooping around. I want to be by myself and be private-like." "Oriental?" Mason asked. "Yeah, the houseboy she's got. I don't know why she hasn't fired him a long time ago. To tell you the truth, I've been looking for that FBI to come around and, well, I guess I ain't going to say nothing more." Mason didn't press him, but nodded sympathetically. "Well, as I understand it, if we can fix things so we can see Mrs. Shore without the police grabbing us, you want to see her? Otherwise, it can wait. Is it that?" Lunk said, "I can't wait." "That's important." "Yes." Mason gave the matter thoughtful consideration. "Well, let's go down and see if the coast is clear." "Where is she?" Mason said. "She's in the hospital." "Yeah, I know. But what hospital?" "I'll drive you there." Mason eased the car past the street intersection. At this hour of the night, you don't ordinarily meet anyone on the intersection, but if you do meet someone, he's driving like the devil. You can get smacked at an intersection as easy as not. Uh-huh. So you've been working for Mrs. Shore for some 12 years? Yeah, going on 13. You knew her husband then? Lunk glanced at Mason sharply, saw nothing except an expressionless profile as Mason's eyes held steady on the road ahead. Yes, one of the finest men that ever set foot in the garden. So I've heard. Peculiar about his disappearance, wasn't it? Uh-huh. What do you think about it? Who, me? Yes. Why should I think anything about it? Mason laughed. You do think, don't you? I'm paid for gardening, Mason said. It's an interesting family. You know him? Lunk asked. All of them? I met some of them. I'm doing some work for Gerald Shore. How do you like him? Oh, he's all right, I reckon. He ain't like his brother Franklin, though. About the lawn and the flowers. He don't seem to care much about him, so I don't see much of him. Mrs. Shore gives the orders, except when that damn Jap tries to horn in. Know what that heathen devil was trying to do just a little while ago? No. Get her to take a trip for her health. Wanted the whole family to get out and let him give the house a thorough cleaning inside and out. Guess he wanted to take 3 or 4 months doing it. Wanted her to go to Florida and take the niece with her. And I happen to know he'd been talking with George Alper about it. May have been Alper's idea. You know him? No. He's the fair-haired boy child right now. Seems like an old lady liked his daddy, or he liked her. And sure which, I do my work and want to be left alone. That's all I ask. How is Como? A pretty good worker? Oh, he works all right, but you always have the feeling that his eyes are staring through your back. You said you lived at the Shore place for a while? Have any trouble with Como while you were living there? No fights, nothing open. My brother was the one that had the trouble with him. Your brother? Mason asked, taking his eyes from the road long enough to flash a quick glance at Della Street. You had a brother living there with you? Uh-huh. For about 6, maybe 7 months. What happened to him? Died. While you were living there? Nope. After you moved, eh? How long after? Week or two. Sick long? Nope. Heart trouble, I suppose? Nope. He was younger than me. Della Street said soothingly, I know just how he feels about it. He doesn't want to talk about it, do you, Mr. Lunk? Nope. Della Street went on rapidly. It's the way when someone near you gets to pass away. It's a shock. Your brother must have been smart, Mr. Lunk. What makes you say that? Oh, just little things in the way you describe him. He seems to have been a man who wasn't taken in by anybody. That is, the Japanese houseboy didn't fool him anyway. I'll say he didn't. It must have been rather hard to start doing work by yourself after having your brothers helping you in the garden. He didn't help me. He was there visiting. He hadn't been well for quite a while, not able to do any work. People of that sort sometimes live a lot longer than the husky, strong people who don't know what an ache or a pain is. That's right, Della said. Mr. Shore must have been a very fine man. Yes, ma'am, he sure was. He was certainly nice to me. Letting your brother stay in the house that way? I don't suppose they charged him room and board. Nope, they didn't, Lunk said. And I'll never forget how Shore acted when my brother passed away. I'd be spending my money on doctors and things, and, well, Shore just called me in and told me how he understood the way I felt. And know what he did? No, what did he do? Gave me $350 so I could ship him back east and gave me time off from work so I could go along with him on the train. My mother was alive then, and it meant a lot to her, having me bring Phil home that way and having the funeral right there. She's passed away since? Della asked. Uh-huh. 5 years ago. Never had anything hit me quite as hard as the way Mr. Shore acted about that. I thanked him at the time. I wanted to thank him some more, but he was gone when I got back from Bury and Phil. Mason nudged Della Street with his knee so that she wouldn't pounce on the opening and alarm the gardener. Then after a moment or two, Mason asked casually, "That was right about the time he disappeared." "Just that time," Mason said. "Those Japs certainly are clever. The Orientals know a lot about drugs that we don't." Lunk leaned forward so he could look searchingly into the lawyer's face. What made you say that?
Oh, I don't know, Mason said. I was just thinking out loud. I sometimes get funny ideas.
Well, what was funny about that idea?
It wasn't even an idea, Mason said. I was just thinking out loud.
Lunk said significantly, well, I've been doing a lot of thinking, too.
Mason waited a few seconds, then observed casually, if I had a Jap around and I didn't like him, I'd sure hate to be living in the house with him. Have him fixing or serving food for me. I don't trust him.
That's the same way I feel, Lunk said. I'm going to tell you something, Mr. What'd you say your name was?
Mason.
Well, I'll tell you something, Mr. Mason. There was a while after I heard about Mr. Shore disappearing that I'd have bet dollars to donuts the Jap had something to do with it. And then later on, I began to wonder if maybe the Jap hadn't had something to do with it. You know, the way Phil died? It could have been something, you know, poison? Mason asked.
Well, I ain't saying anything. Personally, I ain't got any use for the sneaking, treacherous race, but I want to be fair. I've done him one injustice already.
Oh, is that so?
Lunk said. Well, to tell you the truth, I sort of suspected him of having a hand in, well, I'll tell you. I thought for a while that maybe he wanted to get Mr. Shore out of the way, and he sort of practiced first on my brother to see if it had been the right dose, and, you know, the way Mr. Shore disappeared and all that, and coming right on top of Pill's death. I didn't think so much of it at the time, but I got to thinking more about it later on.
Mason again nudged Della Street with his elbow as he piloted the car around the corner toward the hospital.
Well, I don't see that's doing the Jap any injustice.
Nope, Lunk said positively. He didn't do it. But up to a few hours ago, you couldn't have convinced me of that if you'd argued all night. Just goes to show how we get an idea through our heads and it sticks. To tell you the truth, the reason I didn't want to live on that place anymore was on account of the way that Jap was hanging around Phil, was getting worse all the time. I got to feeling kind of sick myself and went to the doctor, and the doctor couldn't find nothing wrong with me, so I up and left.
Did that cure you? Mason asked.
Perked right up, Lunk said, warming to his subject. I got a place of my own, did all my own cooking, and carried my lunches with me. And I'll tell you something else, mister. I didn't live my lunches hanging around where anybody could open up a box and sprinkle something on my sandwich, either. No siree, bub.
And you were cured immediately, within a week or two. But Phil was sick anyway. He didn't make it. He was all shot.
What did Kimono say when you moved out?
The Jam Dap didn't say anything. He just looked at me, but I knew he was what I was thinking, and I didn't care.
What made you change your mind? Why don't you think he poisoned Mr. Shore?
Nope, Lunk said, shaking his positively. He didn't poison that boss. I do think he poisoned Phil, though, and I think he tried poisoning me. What's more, he poisoned that kitten, and if Matilda Shore got a dose of poison, you'll never convince me that Kimono didn't do it. He ain't fooling me none. You mark my words, he wanted to poison someone, but he wanted to see how the poison worked first. 10 years ago, he used Phil to try things out on. Last night, he used here this kitten. Thought for a while. 10 years ago, he was practicing up on Phil to have a go at the boss. Now I know it was me he was after.
But you thought your brother was poisoned. Why didn't you go to the police and
didn't have a thing to go on? When Phil died, I asked the doc about the poison. He laughed at me. Said Phil had been living on the borrowed time for 5 years.
Mason said, well, here's the hospital. You want to go in with me and see the officers and see if they're still on duty?
I don't want to see no officers.
Of course, Mason said. But there's a chance we can get through to see Mrs. Shore.
Della Street looked at Mason apprehensively. I can run up, Chief, she said, and see if they're on duty. And
no, Mason said significantly. I want to take Mr. Lunk up with me.
You see, he explained to Lunk, I want to see her once this evening.
Oh, Lunk said, didn't you say you were working for Gerald Shore?
Yes, he's a client of mine. I'm a lawyer.
Mason opened the car door. Come on, Lunk, we'll run up. Della, you won't mind staying here, will you?
She shook her head, but there was a little creases of worry down the center of her forehead.
Mason took Lunk's arm, and the two climbed up the stone steps to the hospital.
As they walked down the long corridor past the receiving and admittance desk, Mason said to Lunk, "Probably just as well to let me do the talking, but you listen carefully, and if I'm not doing all the things right, you give me a nudge." "All right," Lunk said. Mason rang for the elevator, went up to the floor on which Matilda Shore's room was located. A nurse working on some records at the desk looked up from her work. Two men got up out of their chairs at the far end of the corridor and came marching toward the visitors. Mason had his hand on the door of Mrs. Shore's room when one of the men said, "Hold it, buddy." The other man said, "That's Mason, the lawyer. He was here before Lieutenant Tragg had a talk with him." "What do you want?" the man who seemed to be in charge asked. "I want to talk to Mrs. Shore." The man shook his head and grinned. "Nix on it, nix on it," he said. Mason said, "This man with me wants to talk with her." "Well, now does he?" the officer grinned, surveying Lunk as though enjoying a huge joke. "So you both want to talk with her, eh?" "That's right." The man jerked his thumb down the corridor and said, "Back down the elevator, boys. I'm sorry, but it's no go." Mason, raising his voice, said, "Perhaps this man could do you some good if he could talk with Mrs. Shore. He's her gardener. I think Lieutenant Tragg would like to see him, too." The officer nodded to his companion as his hand clapped down on Mason's shoulder. The other officer took his fingers in the back of Lunk's collar. "Come on now, boys, on your way, and don't act rough about it." Mason said, "I think we're really entitled to see her." "Got a pass?" the officer asked. The nurse came efficiently forward on rubber heels. "There are other patients on this floor, and I'm responsible for them. I want no noise, no argument, and no disturbance." One of the officers rang for the elevator. "There won't be any disturbance, miss," he said. "These men are going out. That's all." The elevator came to a stop. The door slid open. Propelled by insistent pressure from behind, Mason and Lunk entered the elevator. "And don't try coming back without a pass," the officer called as the elevator doors clanged shut. Lunk started to say something as they walked down the corridor after the elevator had left them at the street level, but Mason motioned him to be silent. Nor did the lawyer speak until they were out on the sidewalk. Della Street, sitting in the parked car, opened the door. "Things as you expected to find them?" she asked Mason anxiously. Mason was smiling. "Just exactly. Now then, we'll get some place where we can actually talk." Lunk said doggedly, "I've got to reach Mrs. Shore. I don't want to talk to nobody else." "I know," Mason said. "We'll see if we can work out some plan of action." Lunk said, "Listen, I ain't got all night to work on this thing. It's hot. It's got to be handled right now. I've simply got to see her." Mason turned the car into a broad street, which, at this hour of night, showed no traffic. Abruptly, he swung into the curb, parked the car, switched off the headlights and the ignition, turned to Lunk and said sharply, "How do you know Franklin Shore is alive?" Lunk started as though Mason had jabbed him with a pin. "Come on," Mason said. "Speak up. What makes you think I know anything such as that?" "Because you gave yourself away. Remember you said that up until a short time ago, all the talking in the world wouldn't have convinced you that Como hadn't been mixed up with Franklin Shore's disappearance? Well, you've held that belief for several years. You've held it so deeply and sincerely that it's become a fixed obsession with you. Now then, there's only one thing that could have changed your mind so suddenly. You've seen or heard from Franklin Shore." Lunk stiffened for a moment as though preparing to deny the statement, then settled back into the seat as the resistance oozed out of him. "All right, all right. I've seen him. Where is he?" "He's at my place. He came there shortly before you took the streetcar to go to see Mrs. Shore." "That's right. And what did he want?" "He wanted me to do something for him. I can't tell you what it was," Mason said. "Wanted you to go to Mrs. Shore and find out if she'd take him back or something of that sort?" Lunk hesitated a moment, then said, "I ain't gonna tell you what he told me. I promised him I wouldn't ever tell that to any living man." Mason asked, "How long was it after Franklin Shore came to your house that you went out to take the streetcar?" "Quite a little while." "Why the delay?" Lunk hesitated, then said, There wasn't any delay. Mason glanced at Della Street and then asked Lunk, "Had you gone to bed when Franklin Shore called on you?"
"Nope. I was listening to a news broadcast when he knocked at the door. I like to fell over dead when I seen him who it was."
"You recognized him without any difficulty?"
"Yeah, sure. He hadn't changed so much, not near as much as she has. Looks about like he did the day he left."
Mason glanced significantly at Della Street and said, "There's no reason why you should stay up any longer, Della. I'll take you down the street a few blocks to a taxi stand. You can take a taxi home."
She said, "You're not keeping me up. I wouldn't miss this for the world.
You need some sleep, my dear," Mason interrupted solicitously. "Remember, you have to be at the office promptly at 9, and it will take you a long time to get home."
"Oh, I see. I guess so."
Mason switched on the ignition, drove rapidly to a nearby hotel where a taxi was parked at the curb. Della Street jumped out with a quick, "Good night, see you in the morning, Chief," and walked across to the taxi cab. Mason drove down the street for a couple of blocks, then parked the car again. "We'd better get this thing straight, Lunk," he said. "You say Franklin Shore knocked on your door?" The gardener was sullen and suspicious. "I've got it straight. Sure, he knocked. The doorbell wasn't working." Mason shook his head. "I'm not certain that you did right. It might make trouble for you with Mrs. Shore trying to intercede on behalf of her husband." Lunk said, "I know what I'm doing." "You owe Franklin Shore a debt of gratitude," Mason went on. "You want to do everything you can to help him out, don't you?"
"Yes."
"And you know Mrs. Shore hates him, don't you?"
"Yes."
"No. No. Mason said, "You must have talked with Franklin Shore for a couple of hours before you started out to see Mrs. Shore."
"Not that long.
An hour, perhaps?"
"Perhaps."
Well, it looks like Mason has got some more questions for Mr. Lunk, and we'll have to find out next week in The Case of the Careless Kitten by Earl Stanley Gardner. That completes our readings for today. I do hope you've enjoyed it, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives. This has been Joyce Vesper, your volunteer broadcaster for Sun Sounds of Arizona and for Animal Companions. Stay healthy, everyone. Be well. Be happy. Bye-bye.